for giving me this opportunity to share my experience, strength, and hope. And I'd like to also thank the Laurel Mountain Highlands area for inviting me here to share. I'd also like to thank my sponsee and my husband who made this journey with me. Today's my husband's anniversary, celebrating 4 years clean. My topic, relapse, reality, not a requirement. You know the way they got these folded little pieces of paper in there? So when I first opened the paper, I was telling the gentleman sitting next to me, all I seen was R-E-L-A. I said, oh God, please not relationships. Please don't do that to me. So when I opened it, I was kind of happy because I do have some experience in this area. Tell you a little bit about myself. My clean date is 3/22/03. I myself just celebrated 4 years last month. When I first came to Narcotics Anonymous, it was 1997. Like most of us, I was hopeless, helpless. I became accustomed to living, like the book tells us, way below the animal level. I come from a very, very small town. So when I moved to the city and I'm not going to say that I didn't use back home, but the adjustment that I had to make to survive was drastic. So when I got here, I was so desperate, and I was so, and I share this often when I share about being beat down, beat under, beat beneath, beaten to a level where there's no place for you, nothing for you to but surrender. I was broken. I mean, I was broken to a level like self-esteem issues had nothing. I mean, it all played a part, which I found out later on. But the part where I was at when I first got here, all I wanted to do was stop using drugs because I thought that was my problem. I thought that I was perfect. All I had to do was put the crack down and everything else was going to be fine. I got here. And I think my ears were only partially open because the only thing I heard was meeting makers make it and get a sponsor and get a home group. I had one sponsor, I had one home group, and that's the only meeting I went to. If you ever wanted to find me, Thursday night at 7 o'clock, I was at Turning Point faithfully. I even got in some level of service. I stayed the home group secretary forever because I thought that was my meeting and I could run it the way I wanted and everything was fine. And along the way, I acquired some things. I married my first husband. I reestablished a relationship with my daughter. I became a productive member of society. I lived in a nice house. I drove a nice car. I had all the finer things and life was good. Then the old bugaboos of my disease, like, crept in. And Narcotics Anonymous, what I had known of Narcotics Anonymous wasn't enough for me. It wasn't doing the job anymore. I needed to feel acceptance on a whole nother level. So I acquired some new friends and started doing some new things without picking up the drug yet. I started participating in my daughter's life. She's 19, she'll be 20 in September. Oh, I have two kids. I have a 20-year-old and I have a 2-year-old. God's funny. I started participating in my daughter's life. She was a cheerleader. And anybody who knows about Little League football in the city area, most of the coaches are drug dealers, and most of the cheerleading coaches are their girlfriends. They hang out at bars after practice, and they do all the things that we don't do in here. Well, initially, my disease told me I could hang out with them. I just didn't have to use. So I started simply hanging out after practice. And then I noticed the turning point no more became, it didn't fit in my schedule. I couldn't make it anymore because I had to be there for the girls. And that took up so much time that by the time I worked the 8-hour day, got home and made dinner for my family and went to practice, I was too tired to go to a meeting. But I got this thing licked anyway. I ain't using. It's all good. I started going out Sunday through Saturday. I found somewhere to go. For 6 months, the disease told me, see, you got this. You ain't got a drink. And I'll never forget the day. It was New Year's Eve, and everyone was going out with their partners. Along the way, let me go back, because along the way, I started emptying out the old people and filling them in with the new. When I got back this time, what I realized was that I was moving people out my way so I could get high and couldn't nobody stop me. But not to me. They was on my nerves. They wasn't on the same page. They didn't understand me. They seen the train coming, not me. But it's okay. Today. New Year's Eve. Everybody was going out and everybody had dates and everybody was doing their thing. And the rationalization of my justification was, I'm not going to go out this year. I'm going to stay home so that when my daughter gets home, her mother won't be in the street. And my grandma always say, the way you bring it in is the way you spend the rest of it. And I ain't going to be in the street all year. Needless to say that, like, when I left my first husband, I bought my movers a case of 22-ounce Old English. And they didn't drink them all. I put them in my refrigerator because when my brother would come over and when my best friend would come over on Sundays when I cooked these big dinners and they'd watch the Steeler games, they would drink a beer or two. Alcohol is a drug. I have a disease that is progressive and it will kill me. There's no in between. Ain't no, I could never stop nowhere with the first one. No first one I ever did. So I'm at home by myself. Ain't nobody even there. I ain't in the bar. I'm by myself. Here come the disease. Everybody got dates. Everybody hanging out. Everybody bringing in the new year. I told you you wasn't nothing. I told you you didn't fit in with them. I told you this is the whole thing. And like, in an instant, it was like, fuck it. Go get one of them beers. I went to my refrigerator and I got the beer, and this is where not playing the whole tape comes in. They tell you to play the whole tape, not half the tape. I stood in my hallway with this beer and I did this whole thing like, if you crack that beer and you drink that beer, everything that you work for and everything that you've acquired over the last, and let me get honest, the last 3.5 years, not 4. I never told nobody I took that first drink till March, the beginning of March. I took a drink a whole year before I'd even admitted to anybody that I'd ever used. Till last month. My secrets will keep me sick. I need to get honest. I took a drink. No, I didn't have 4.5 years. I had 3 because I drank that beer. Everything you work for is going to be null and void. It's not going to matter. Not Carmela. Do you remember you came from sleeping on porches, eating food off the street, knocking, sucking dick for less than doing all kind of degrading things that you didn't come from? No, I didn't play that part of the tape. The only part of the tape I played was if I opened this beer, 3.5 years are down the drain. Not all of the degrading stuff I did before I got there. None of that. I didn't even remember none of that. I learned my, play the whole, listen, look at that last day. That's all you got to do. Where was you at that last day you got high? What condition was you in? If I'd even got that far, I might not have drank that beer. But like, I drank it, and it was good. It was like, it was cold. It had been in the refrigerator for 6 months. It was real cold. I drank it. And like, I don't know if it was 30 seconds that went by, but it wasn't long before shame and guilt said, fuck it, you might as well drink another one. It's a wrap now. I drank another beer. I don't remember nothing after that. I remember in less than 30 days I was smoking crack again. I remember in less than 30 days I had rented my car out. I remember less than 30 days my daughter came to me and said, "Look at you, you're starting to look bad." That relapse. Woo. I thought initially when I got here, I was beat up. Ain't no beating like the beating you get when you pick up again, when you know you don't have to live like that. Oh my God. Listen, the stuff I did yet to never, cha-ching, all cashed in. I didn't think that I was going to make it back here. Needless to say, like, when I got clean the first time, I went to jail once. And I ain't even going to go into my criminal history. But I'm going to go into it on the real. I had one thing on my jacket. One was a misdemeanor. That was it. Excuse me. When I went back, I went to jail 5 times in 1 month. I now stand before you a 2-time convicted felon. I went to jail for stuff like just crazy. I didn't only go to jail. I was in a car accident. I hit a pole, a wall, a tree, another car, and flipped over 3 times. Got up, found my pipe, found my coke, found my weed, found my liquor, and ran to the nearest house I knew and continued to get high. It didn't stop there for me. I didn't get it. Like when they say we don't make it back here, everybody don't make it back here. All them times I went to jail, even that car accident that I got up and I walked away from, that was God telling me, what do I have to do? This ain't what I got for you. When are you going to get it? I still kept getting high. Listen, they built this parking ride. Like, let me tell you what the parking ride is. The parking ride are these little, like, big-ass parking lots where you park your car and you get on the bus and you go wherever you got to go so you don't have to pay for parking down. Downtown Pittsburgh, park and pay, and you'll kill yourself trying to park and pay down there. So they built these parking rides. You park there for free. And they built one right by my house. Let me tell y'all about my house. I had bootleg gas, bootleg water, bootleg lights, damn near no windows. You could see outside. But I cleaned it up, and this was my house because it was beautiful. From the outside, people would be like, "Where in the fuck are you taking me?" I say, "Oh, wait till you get inside. It's so nice." You know, this is so funny. Because I was thinking, like yesterday, it was so funny. I was standing in my house in the bathroom, and I was thinking about some of the stupidest shit that I used to say when I got high. And it disgusts me today, and some of the stuff, like, that I am too intelligent to articulate myself in that manner. I know that today. But we come up with some of the dumbest stuff in the world, and we think it's cool as hell. You see some shit like, "Run it in," and "Let me see it," and I was really disgusted with myself. So I had this house, and it was right across the street from the parking ride. When they built it, I said, "This is going to be the death of me. Because the police can park over there amongst all them 8 million cars and see when I come in the house, and they're coming to get me." And I swear, the last 3 times I went to jail, that's exactly what happened. They sat up in the parking ride, waited for me to go in the house. They must have sat there because they would wait till I went to sleep and know I was in their sleep and then come knock on the door. My dad told him, I said, "I ain't got no clothes on." They said, "You better put some on because you're coming with us." I said, "Okay, what did I do now?" They come in with the warrant and tell me what I did. And all this, I mean, it was real crazy because the last time I went to jail and I finally got down there, it was like when I finally went to court, when I finally went to trial, I had 7 cases and 27 charges, something like that. And it was sad, but I know when I got down in that holding cell. I'm going to go back to the first time I went to jail. When I went to jail the first time, and I had to state, I told you I had one charge, misdemeanor, but I had to sit in jail for 4.5 months. My judge had went on vacation, and then it was the holidays, so I had to wait till after the holidays to see her, so I had to sit till she came back. If that's not God doing for me what I can't do for myself, I don't know what it is. And I didn't have no acceptance with it initially, but somebody said to me, I don't know what's on that paper, but whatever it is, it must not be too good. You need to go in there and ask God for some help. And I wanted to crack the lady with the phone, but I didn't. I just walked away, and when I got in my cell, I didn't know what else to do but hit my knees and pray. The next thing I knew, I was in there for like 1.5 hours on my knees crying like, God, whatever, I don't know, but if I got to be here, please change me while I'm here. If I got to be here, I don't want to be the same daughter, the same mother, the same sister, the same person. Whatever it was that was drug in here, please don't let it be that that walked out. I did this, the surrender piece, that surrender thing. Something happened to me in there, because when I came out, I swear on everything I love, I was not the same person that went in that cell. So like when I relapsed and I went knocking people in the head and taking their checks and all that other sick stuff we do, like when I ended up with all these cases and all these charges, when I went to jail the last time, I said, man, I said, God, all right, you got my attention. What is it that you want me to do? And it was so clear. It was like, Carmela, you already know what you got to do. This is a whole nother surrender. When I surrendered, I need to say that my first trip around here, I was one of them nevers. Ain't nothing in the world never going to make me smoke crack again. Ain't nothing, I ain't never going to, shoo, you couldn't kill, I don't care who died. I ain't never smoking no crack. Well, sooner or later, I was right back down on Braddock Avenue doing this. And that I will never, this drug, look, the disease is more powerful than me. I know that now. I ain't never going to say never. What I'm going to say is, one day at a time, if I continue to turn my will over and let him do what he need to do with me, I got a better shot at not using. But I ain't never going to say never. I already played the never game. Show me who won. When I came back this time, I was in jail. And I ain't never been one of them people to get to jail and jump in all the programs and want just to get off the pod and do all them self-help parenting and NA and all that. Listen, I didn't come here because I didn't have a TV, and I didn't come here because I didn't have no friends. I came here because I committed a crime, and all I want to do is go home. Period. But along the way, like, something happened, and I joined this one group, and there was these people that who had been to jail, who were in recovery, who came, and I had only been there like 3 times, but they had this process where if you were getting ready to be released from jail, they would write your judge and tell your judge that if in fact they released you, they would give you somewhere to go. But upon them sending a letter to the judge, they would give a copy to you. So I went a couple times and I met this lady that scared the bejesus out of me. Y'all think I'm big. She was big as hell. And she didn't take no stuff off of nobody. But she was a gentle, loving, caring, kind person. But she scared the hell out of me. And I sat down, I explained my situation. They wrote my judge's letter. And when they gave me my copy, first of all, I wanted to know who they was talking about. Because they couldn't have been talking about me. All the nice things that was on that paper, that ain't me. But I said, thanks anyway. I won't go argue with them. Y'all can get me out of here. I ain't got no rap. Okay. So I went before my judge, and I had been there 30 days. And I had the one charge. I stayed 4.5 months. This time I had 7 cases, and I had all these cases and all these charges. And I got to go home, and I had 3 years probation with an armed robbery case still pending. And I had a friend who, I was so ready to stop getting high, I told him, look, I'll go to a homeless shelter. I just don't want to go back to Homewood. That's all I want to do. And he said, no, you know, my mom was doing her thing, and it wasn't a safe environment for me there. And it was either my mom's or the shelter. And he said, no, you can come and stay with me until you get yourself together, until you get on your feet. He lives in Homewood. And it's okay, though, because I got to take me everywhere I go. It ain't like, so when I got off the bus, and this is what they tell you, when you're in them programs and you get released from them programs, that's the moment it counts. You got that 1 second to make that one choice. Either you're going to stay on track or you're going back to getting high, period. And that split second where you're by yourself and you're standing on that street and you got to make a decision, that's your breaking point right there. I stood at the very end of a road that I walked a many a day and I had to make a decision. And looking up the street where I used to get high looked real attractive. But I knew what was waiting for me. So I waited for my ride. And I went there. And, like, my surrender this time was to a whole nother level. Because what I had realized was that when I put down the crack, the problems just began. Because now it was time to deal with my ideas, my attitudes, and my behaviors. And I was in this program, these letter-writing people. This program was designed for me, and I can only speak for me, to break me down, for me to obtain the ability to look at me and take responsibility for my actions and stop blaming everybody around me for what happens to me. Now, do I want to get high or do I want to get rid of Carmela's bugaboos? People say stuff to me and this. I remember this lady, and I share this all the time too. And me and this lady are like this today. But I knew it was only her job. Like, you know, you get a whole bunch of women in one room for too long of a time, some shit's bound to jump off. Always. It's going to happen. Who's lunar, who's when, who's crazy, who ain't on their medicine, whatever it is, something's going to happen. And, like, one day some stuff happened, and because I had been there the longest, I was the only one who hadn't relapsed, and I was about to graduate. I felt like I could do no wrong because I had the most clean time. So they got to doing their thing, and I got to my self-righteous ass, got to doing what I do, and the counselor came out and she said, you know, you really need to something, 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 because if you soon don't start kissing somebody's ass, you'll be back sucking dick. I wanted to call the program director. I wanted to call the governor. I wanted to call everybody and get her fired. Everybody that could have anything to do with them, I want them to lose their grant. I don't want the doors to be open no more, none of that. But in the process, I gained the ability to maybe not like what you say, but take what I need. Use what I need. There was a message in that. And I was so glad that the time that I was there, that I was able to get that. Because that's what this is about. Everything in here. If you got a sponsor that boo-boos you and like, oh, baby, it's okay, and all that bullshit, you got the wrong sponsor. Because we some sick people. I know I'm sick. I'm sick. And if anybody get the, you can't hold boo-boo me. I'm not boo-boo. I am not boo-boo. I come from a place where I, look, rob, kill, steal, whatever. My survival skills up the, like, psh, man, well, it's whatever. Hit you over the head with a gun, call the police, I'll go to jail, you got to prove it. I'm going to look to the bitter ends with everything I do. I stayed. I grew. But my behaviors would not change. I started taking hostages because I still didn't want to look at me. I needed someone to focus on so that I didn't have to deal with Carmela. I hurt my children. I hurt my husband. But most of all, I hurt myself. In this past year, thank God for step work. Thank God for sponsorship. Thank God for Narcotics Anonymous. Because there's no other place in the world I could come up here and tell people what I do, what I've done, and who I am. And y'all will still hug me when I'm done. Hey, no, but I couldn't go to work. Well, my sponsor and I now work together. So I could go to work and tell somebody. But under normal circumstances, I couldn't tell nobody that. But it's been a year of growing up. My husband and I can relapse in a lot of areas, not just picking up, because you relapse way before you pick up, way before. And I was one of those. What I've learned in the last couple of months is that when my behaviors show up, I start pointing the finger for those behaviors. I did this because, and this was a reaction to you doing. Once I say because and reaction to, I'm no longer taking personal responsibility for my part. I'm now switching the focus to you. We're going through this storm. It ain't even a storm. We're going through life. And stuff is happening. And I'm showing up. God ain't in it nowhere. I pray. I take my will back. And I do what I want to do. I hurt people. I mistreat people. I talk to people any kind of way. I belittle people. But I have a justification and a rationalization for it all. That's where the relapse starts. Because when I'm there, I'm not growing here. Thank God for my relapse. Because I can see it and I can stop it. I'm not going to get it right every time. But if I get it right once, goddamn, I got a shot. Because I'm a lot further than I was the first time. If I just get it right one time, if I don't react to nothing, I got a shot. Because at a point, I reacted every time the same way. My way or the highway. Life ain't set up to please me. It's set up to please God and Him only. If it ain't going my way and it don't feel good, it's probably right. Like I said, I don't get it right all the time, baby. I try. I thank God for my relapse. I thank God for my journey. I'm not the person that I used to be. And I continue on a daily basis to become the woman who I want to be. A woman of integrity, an educated woman, a God-fearing woman, a woman who can respect herself and others. My name is Carmela. Thanks for letting me share.